the dying embers of human existence as the asteroid, a behemoth the size of Texas, hurtles relentlessly toward Earth. The world braces for an apocalyptic end. Deep beneath the bunker, a refuge plunges into the bowels of the Earth. Here the Chosen gather, their purpose clear, to preserve the very soul of our civilization. The 35 and 70 millimeter prints that encapsulate the magic, the emotion, and the dreams of generations past. These masterpieces, each frame a testament to the human spirit, are carefully cataloged and cradled in the cavernous confines of the bunker. Perhaps there was room for more. For friends and family yearning for salvation, but sacrifices must be made. The moving nerds stand united, the keepers of a flame, promising a future where the art of storytelling endures, transcending the boundaries of time and space. God help us all.
Welcome to Back to the Framerate, part of the Westin Media Podcast Network. Join us as we watch and discuss films on VOD and streaming platforms, deliberating on whether each is worthy of salvation or destined for destruction in the face of the impending asteroid apocalypse. I am Nathan Schur, and accompanying me are the extraordinary movie mavens Brianna Butterworth, Ellie Escobar, and Sam Cole. My first question to my co-hosts: you are stranded in a frozen wilderness and have a choice to make. Do you spend the night in a recently deceased horse carcass or a tauntaun carcass? Sam, you first.
Horse carcass. Tauntaun carcass would smell worse, I think.
They smell pretty bad on the outside of here.
Yeah.
What the hell is a tauntaun?
It's a snow creature from Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back. Luke Skywalker has to, or Han Solo has to cut one's like stomach open.
Is that really?
To heat frozen Luke. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Much I know my Star Wars. Okay. Yeah. No, horse.
Horse, I guess. This is a terrible question.
I had to start the show off right, you know? I mean, this is.
I mean, what do you care? Hodges are made out of freaking horse anyway. Yeah. Yes, they are. The hot dogs. They make hot dogs out of horses in size, in case you didn't know. It's just if you eat them.
They make all beef. I'm not getting into hot dogs.
Wait, so hot dogs are made of horses?
Intestines. Yeah, it's true.
Is that true? Wow.
Don't eat them anymore.
But what about a Leonardo DiCaprio stuffed horse? I'm thinking that this is some sort of like Thanksgiving delicacy, like the turducken, that if you put something inside Leo, you put him inside a horse, you've got this.
He took all the good bits out of that horse.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyways, we're getting ahead of ourselves. As you can tell, if you don't know already, we are reviewing 2015's from Alejandro Iñárritu. Did I say that right, Ellie? Close enough, maybe?
Iñárritu. It's close enough.
Iñárritu.
You had to roll your R's.
I have eaten a ruffle, so yes.
If I was a horse lord in Lord of the Rings, I'd be from Rohan. Rohan.
There you go.
Oh, that's terrible, man. Wah.
Let's get into our discussion on this movie. This is a pretty impressive bit of filmmaking I think we're going to talk about today. Hang on a moment while I find my missing document that has everything I need for this episode.
Nathan, you want to tell us what it's about?
I want to, and that's the document I am looking for.
In the meantime, if you're while waiting for that, you can revisit the 1987 Garbage Pail Kids, an incredible film. I think it was 87. Mm-hmm. It's a cinematic masterpiece. Yeah. Give it another spin.
Even better than that, I played on repeat Josie and the Pussycats this week. Holds up.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
So I have here the brief plot synopsis of the
Revenant. So you don't want to talk about Josie and the Pussycats?
No. Which I have found on the internet. So here it is. While exploring uncharted wilderness in 1823, legendary frontiersman Hugh Glass, not huge ass, which I keep wanting to say, sustains injuries from a brutal bear attack. When his hunting team leaves him for dead, Glass must utilize his survival skills to find a way back home while avoiding natives on their own hunt. Grief-stricken and fueled by vengeance, Glass treks through the wintry terrain to track down John Fitzgerald, a former confidant and who betrayed and abandoned him. Here is a part. Here's part of the trailer from The Revenant.
Only safe thing to do is track a new course back up on land.
Then what we gonna do? Sit out there like a bunch of goddamn ducks?
You and your half-breed son get to walk on out?
I'm talking to you.
Thing to do would be to finish him off quick.
He's to be cared for as long as necessary.
I understand.
Get away! Help!
Yes, so that was a clip from the trailer of The Revenant, and I think I'm going to pass the torch over to Sam, who has some movie facts for us.
The Revenant. The release year was January 8th, 2016, at least in the U.S. It was directed by Alejandro Iñárritu and also directed Birdman and Babel, both like very cinematic experiences in my opinion. It was written by Mark L. Smith and it was based on the novel by Michael Punk, is it?
Yeah, I go sure. with that.
Sure.
No. Sam is cracking up.
Oh man. Ladies and gentlemen, that's what you call losing it on the air, NBC Live. But so
Sam broke it.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was like a very, very ambitious film, and Alejandro actually wanted to shoot the entire film sequentially using only natural light in Canada. And in addition to that, like he only wanted to shoot at the magic hour, which sort of gives the film its whole look, which I think is incredible. But actually bad weather chased them, so they went to Argentina in search of snow. This like hugely changed like the filming and the schedules. And so instead of a 2-week break, they took a 6-week break, and which caused issues with other actors' schedules. Oddly enough, Tom Hardy was supposed to be in the Suicide Squad, but he had to back out due to contractual obligations to The Revenant, and they still hadn't finished shooting. There's a ton of info on this movie, but I'll end for the moment by just saying the main cast: Leonardo DiCaprio as Hugh Glass, Tom Hardy as John Fitzgerald, Domhnall Gleeson as Captain Andrew Henry, Will Poulter as Bridger, Forrest Goodluck as Hawk, Dwan Howard as Elk Dog, Milau Nolekko as Powaka, and Arthur Red Cloud as Hickok. Amazing film, opening weekend in the U.S. That can't be right. It's made $474,000. That's nice.
Well, keep in mind, this was released. Well.
No, that can't be right.
Yeah.
I that was opening weekend. Yeah.
Opening weekend. But it was before it was distributed worldwide. But it did well. Worldwide gross $532 million over that. Almost. But yeah. So.
Yeah. I think it's because it probably had a very limited release for like maybe one night, one theater in New York or L.A. And that's what they're accounting for that opening release. Sometimes the numbers are very misleading.
I could be wrong. I feel like it came out like this says in 2015. That's but it what didn't I get see. A wide. It didn't get a wide until January 2016 because I remember it coming out that January. Like I saw it in the theater a couple days after it opened.
I think there's some discrepancies in this because I kept reading wide release on December 25th, 2015. So I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah, IMDb Pro had it as the January date.
Interesting.
Well, Providence Place Mall didn't get it until January 6th. So if Providence Place Mall didn't get it on time, get faster, you bastards.
just to add on to that, we got to mention that the cinematography from Emmanuel Ubetsky, who is one of the greats of the modern era, has worked with some of the best directors around. He shot Sleep Hollow, Y Tu Mama Tambien, Children of Men, Tree of Life. Oh, he's done a lot of stuff with Alejandro Iñárritu, Birdman, and Alfonso Cuarón. A lot of movies with him. Gravity, he shot. He won three straight Academy Awards, which is
incredible.
Extremely impressive. Birdman, Gravity, and this film, three in a row. I don't know if that's ever been done, at least in cinematography. I don't know what other categories somebody's won three straight Academy Awards in one category, but that's extremely impressive. So I think that's worth acknowledging.
Yeah. Amazing, yeah.
Also, like Reality Bites, Meet Joe Black.
Did Reality Bites do?
So yeah,
it's one of my favorite films.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The dude's prolific.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
So if you're going to have someone try to chase down this crazy idea of sequential filming,
the guy has just a laundry list of credits. Yeah. So let's get into our thoughts on this film. I can't wait to hear this. And I think we took a little random. We have a tradition now before we go on the air. We do a random number generator. And Ellie, you're the winner this week. So you're going to begin sharing your thoughts on The Revenant.
My ratings for this movie, if I could do a 10, I would give it a 10, period. Because it's that movie that just grabbed you from the very beginning till the very end. I saw nothing wrong with this film, whether it was obviously director, because I am biased. He is my favorite director in the whole entire world. And I only dream as an actress to work with him one day. And I think that's why I study so hard every freaking day. And that's why I'm always in acting class. Because I dream of the day when Iñárritu says, "Are you ready for me, Ellie?" "Yes, I am. Alejandro. Alejandro." Okay, so anything that Alejandro makes, I'm going to love. Anything that Cuarón makes, I'm going to love. Anything Guillermo del Toro makes, I'm going to love. Anyhow, going back to Revenant, I saw this film when it first came out, and then I went and bought the DVD. Because I loved it that much that I wanted to just have it available. So whenever I felt like watching this film, and every time I watch this film, I cry. It doesn't fail. I'm like, my heart bleeds, my heart aches. It's so real to me, not just because of, you know, the story of Native American, but it's so well written, you know, by Alejandro and his partner there. The other guy that wrote the story. But isn't this an adaptation? This is from a book, right? Yeah.
Yes. I don't have that information in front of me. Sorry.
So anyhow, I'm so glad that we did it, that we actually saw the film. And I have to say, the music, the cinematography, those places that Emmanuel took us with his camera, unlike anything else I've seen, right? So it's like the fact that they shot this film in that kind of weather, that was so real to me. I think that if they've done it in a stage or something, it would not have the same effect. But it's Alejandro, and Alejandro does not like to do fake stuff. He's going to go hard. He's going to go with the real thing. This is why I love his filmmaking. And so I loved... There were parts in the movie that just really touched me. It's from the very beginning when he is holding his son and he says to him, "Fight until there's no breath left in you to fight." You know, and I thought, wow, what a profound line for me. And the other line in the movie is when he tells them that he should stop trying to make them hear them, you know, the white men, because they don't hear you. They only see your skin color. And boy, that's so profound to me, because like so many times in my own life, living in the United States, is exactly how I felt. I haven't been heard by, you know, like whether it was school or at my work, my employers. It's almost like it didn't matter what I said, you know? And I remember one time somebody said the same thing to me. "Don't even try it, because all they can see is your skin color." And so I totally related to that line when I first saw it. But from the action to the emotional part to the, it's got so much heart. It's got so much love. It's got, what's the word? Grit? That one, yeah. It's got grit. Mm-hmm. There aren't very many females in this film, except for like the wife that appears from time to time and the other girl that gets kidnapped, and except for that. And then the whole struggle that he had. I mean, I felt that I was there struggling with DiCaprio the whole time, through the snow, through the rivers, through the anguish, through the heartbreak of seeing his son being killed, you know. And then when he found the Native American that was eating the buffalo, is it a buffalo, right? The buffalo? And he's just eating that. By the way, Arthur mm-hmm. I met Arthur Red Cloud back in 2019 when I went to.
I saw those pictures that you posted. That was amazing.
Not only did Iñárritu make me have a profound moment with his film, but meeting Arthur Red Cloud gave me another profound moment that year. It was in this around December 2019, just before the pandemic hit. I was in Sacramento doing a film, and he was in the same film. And I met him, and he came up from across the other side of the table, and he sat next to me. And he said to me, "I need to talk to you." I said, "Oh." It was so surreal to talk to this man. He gave me such a peaceful feeling, and he told me about his vision for me in this industry. And I won't reveal it here because it's something that's just between Arthur and myself. But just know that knowing the vision that he saw for me just left an imprint for the rest of my life. And I think this is why I work so hard as well, because I know and I believe in that vision. And he also told me what my spirit animal was, which I never knew. And he said, my spirit animal is the peacock. And I said, why the peacock? And he says, I'm not going to tell you. I want you to find out.
Did you have lots of knowledge?
He said, I could tell you why the peacock, but you got to go and do your research and find out why the peacock is your spirit animal in Native American, in indigenous. So I did, and I researched it, and I realized, yep, I am the peacock. I can see why it is the spirit animal for myself. But putting that aside, I thought he did a great job. Arthur did a great job in that scene that he did with DiCaprio. And I love everything about this movie. And I don't want to give it up some more. So you guys, whoever's going to follow me, say something else. And then I'll just nail you if you say anything else. I will nail you.
Ellie, you're doing absolute mic drop right here. I can tell that because I don't know how anyone's going to follow you up with this. I love that you have such a personal connection to this film, and it's clear that your emotional attachment to this is strong, and I love that. I wish I had a particular film or a certain film that I felt that strongly about. There are films that I love and I have a connection to, like my childhood or something like that. But I can't say that I probably have anything that I feel like I am, that is like part of like it's somehow embedded in my DNA somehow. And I feel
I feel that way about Corvette Summer with Mark Hamill, 1978. It just touches my heart, you know, like it's an incredible film.
Oh my God. Only you, Sam, only you.
So I have the unfortunate situation of following up.
Well, you do a great job,
Ellie, but I'm going to do my best here. This is a movie that I feel like I am more impressed by than entertained by. This is one of the most visually stunning films I think I've ever experienced. And I want to emphasize experience because The Revenant feels like more than just a film. It is an immersive experience. It's almost like National Geographic documentary in some ways, and the way it's so hyper focused on on exploring nature and some of the themes. But the way it's shot, obviously, is gobstopping. Mm-hmm. It's like nothing I've seen before. Emmanuel Lubezki, who we've already talked about, was the cinematographer on this. And he's coming off, you know, two straight Academy Awards for Gravity and Birdman. But what he's done in this film is next level. And it's shot almost, it's not quite, but it's almost shot like cinema verite style in many ways, putting the audience right in the middle of the story. It's got all these hyper, like very dynamic, you know, wide angle shots where he puts, where him and Alejandro put the subject, the characters right in front of the lens, and you see them in focus and you see all their surroundings all in sharp focus. And the way this camera is floating, and I don't know if they're using techno cranes or whatever they're using, but it is just something I've never seen before in a movie, which is surprising that this is the first time I've seen this technique really implemented, maybe in this kind of movie. It's just so dynamic. And especially during action scenes, as I'm watching this, you know, especially the intense parts of the film, I couldn't not get the feeling that I was watching almost like a cutscene from a video game. And that's not a knock on this movie, because some people will think that that's a video game, ugh, you know? But that's what I was feeling. I felt like I was watching something like something that was like lifted out of that style, where it's these long, unbroken takes where the camera's floating through this action. It's like, this is like something that I only see done in this, because it's only technically possible in those types of environments. So the fact that they were able to do that was mind-blowing to me. And I think of like that opening scene where you've got the camp and they're attacked by the is it called the Ree? Is that the type of Native Americans or the Indians? I got a little confused with some of the classifications of all the factions of Indians or Native Americans that were out there. But the camera doesn't ever cut. And I have a feeling there might be some breaking of the illusion of that, because in Birdman, there are a lot of cuts, but they made it seem like there weren't. So I'm kind of curious if they kind of did the same thing here at times. But there are dozens and dozens of scenes that follow that formula in this, which was just extremely impressive for an action scene. I'll get more into the cast and their performances later on. I'm sure people have some thoughts on that. But overall, this is technically just a marvel of a film to look at. And I'm so thankful that I had dropped the extra dough to buy the 4K Blu-ray a couple weeks ago. Seeing it in that format and on a premium sound system is absolutely how this film should be seen. If you haven't seen it in the theater, I didn't get a chance to see this in the theater. I don't know why I missed that opportunity. So it was extremely impressive seeing it. I'm glad I didn't see this on DVD or Blu-ray, but the 4K was unbelievable. And the one last thing I want to say before I pass the torch, this is, you know, this is a very simple and straightforward story. You know, first and foremost, this is just really a movie about revenge. Mm-hmm. And I do wish it had a little more to say. It is touching on ideas of redemption and atonement, you know, colonialism and the relationship between the European settlers and the indigenous people, you know, nature's indifference. But I don't feel like the film is really all that interested in a deep exploration into any of these themes.
I don't think it's about revenge, though. I think that's easy to believe it's about revenge. But even to the very, very end, DiCaprio didn't, he doesn't kill the man that kills his son. Any father, any mother would do that out of revenge. But he, do you remember what he says at the very end?
It's in God's hands.
In God's hands. So yeah. To me, that's not, he didn't revenge the death.
Well,
I feel.
But the whole movie is him seeking revenge. Like
Seeking revenge. Well, we're going to get to the ending in a moment. I'm down to my last final thought on this, because what I'm trying to say is that I do feel this is a revenge movie. It's about him driven by that revenge over how he was wronged, and not that a movie, you know, always has to have a deep message to it. Movies can sometimes just be pure entertainment. I just feel that I would have enjoyed The Revenant a little bit more if I didn't feel it was mostly just a revenge tale with a splattering of these other things that I had just outlined about, you know, colonialism and all these other things, which are there, but I don't feel like that was what this movie was about at all. So I really loved this movie, but it's very, very straightforward, simple movie. And I appreciate this for it, like an adventure, like action movie. But if it's that kind of movie, I also don't think this movie had to be 2.5 hours long for it to tell that story. So I could have easily seen 25 minutes of content shaved off of this, and this would have been tighter and just as exciting, and cut out a good amount of it, and it would have been extremely entertaining and riveting too. So I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this film at all, but I still like this. I am giving this a 4.
Damn, that's so low. Good. What's wrong with you?
Out of five.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, we're doing ratings of 0 to 5. I know. Right?
Okay. I still don't think this was about revenge.
Okay, and we're gonna get into that some more, I guess, because I feel like this is what this movie is almost entirely about.
Interesting.
But I can't wait to get into it some more. We are on to
B. B was like, I feel like I'm
walking in between. I was like, at least it's not that bad. I feel like I'm walking in the middle of mom and dad fighting. I also did not emotionally connect with this movie. I'm so sorry.
I'm gonna slap both of you.
But I did. Sure. You know, that's fine. As long as I don't have to watch it again. It was. I found it to be really immersive and really technically impressive. And there were things about it. Nathan, you used the word earlier, spectacle, when we were talking about it. It's a total spectacle, especially some of these fight scenes. I think some of it is kind of just sticky, like done to be done, like how Leo's most of his performance is silent. I'm not sure that had to be that, and that we couldn't.
Well, I mean, story incorporated with him, like basically his larynx being
crushed,
and you know, so I mean that's part of the story.
I did see the movie, but I just think like it maybe didn't have to be, or maybe it could have been. I don't know. Like I feel like a lot of it was like, oh, his performance was so great, and he didn't even say anything. I'm like, well, I don't know.
Well, we can get like into later. Said, like, did he deserve the?
That's the beauty the Oscar of the film, though. He didn't have to say a lot of dialogue for it to.
There were plenty of silent movies that I think were better than this. And then nobody talked in those.
Go ahead. But, sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. I technically impressive. I really appreciated how intimate it felt despite those big wide angle shots. Like I really felt like sometimes when people are focusing so much on the landscape, you kind of lose the people in the landscape. And I thought it felt intimate. There was some interesting camera work happening that I wasn't always on board for, especially as we got more close up, but you know, okay. Honestly, I was just watching the whole thing thinking, wow, this is a total like math. Everyone who's working on this film has kind of mastered their craft. Like I was really impressed by the costuming. I was really impressed by the makeup. I was really impressed with the scenery and all that. I don't know. I couldn't get into it.
And what would be your star rating?
Yeah.
3.
I like the numbers. I'm always fascinated by the stars, the numbers.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Sam.
So I truly love this movie. I find it like I saw this in the theater. I found it like incredibly immersive. I personally felt really emotionally like involved and connected. And for me, the movie is like this elemental story about surviving against all odds with a little bit of like faith mixed in there. But I just like the fact that like, yeah, you guys have like touched upon all of this already, but like all the technical filmmaking and all the prowess and everything, I really enjoy that it tells this like simple, visceral, elemental story. It's almost like an art house emotional story. like version of like Steven Spielberg's Duel or something like that, but in a much different like context with like people and characters, and partially based on a true story. But I, there's a lot of what I love about this movie, just from a technical point of view, is there's a lot of filmmakers that like, they just paint in the foreground where they'll like shoot with the actors and the background is like left up to CG. And this movie uses like the whole entire canvas where like from the perspective of or angle that you'll see something. I was terrified at the beginning when their camp is being attacked and the camera pans up and way up on the ridge, you see like tons of horses and you're like, oh my God, they are completely surrounded. Like they are. And so I just, for me, I'm always looking for a movie, I guess, subconsciously to do something like different or like immerse me or grab me in a way that no film has before. And this film hypnotized me. When I saw this in the theater, I had like an app, not a watch, but like an app on my phone that just like monitors you for, and I forgot what the app was, but for the 2.5 hours of the film, it monitored me as asleep because I just didn't move. Like I didn't move my heartbeat was like,
you were getting rhythmic. No exercise.
So I was like, so
into the movie. That happened to me.
You were like, hibernating in the winter
the whole time. Like nothing.
Yeah. The movie, like,
nothing.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I was the like, movie, can like, I get up? Can I make dinner? Does the dog have to go like, out, please?
See, for me, the film is like so transporting that I was like, my body was in like a dreamlike state by it. And I can't, I'll try not to, I don't want to like talk too much, but there's like so many scenes in this film that just like blow me away. And I feel anxiety and like emotion. And like when he's walks up the hill and he sees that giant herd of like, I think it's buffalo or something like that. It's or like lighthearted alleviation that there's so much heaviness and darkness in the movie that when he's like catching snow with his tongue with the other guy that saved his life.
That's my favorite scene.
And it's just like, and I love
that scene has so much heart, but it's like the only scene that has that much heart.
What were you watching, babe?
We smile.
What were you watching?
No, see, I felt that. But I felt, I mean, that scene has heart because it's like alleviating.
It's a moment of levity.
Yeah. And I just, so for me, I would give the movie like, I would give it 5 stars. I think it just is like a triumph of even like the CGI elements, they do it well, or it's pretty, like when he goes off the cliff in it with his horse, it's like masked in a way where another movie would have made that like an aggressively like cheap looking CGI shot. Yeah, and this is like blended with like snow falling and flakes. Mm-hmm. So you feel that it's real. Like I'm aware of the visual effects on the bear, but the sequence was so organic and realistic in its behavior that I was just like, this is terrifying. Like I'm terrified right now. So that would be me in a nutshell. I'm just looking over my notes. I think that's, yeah. I just like, a lot of filmmakers don't like paint in the background. And I just like, this movie just uses the whole canvas. So it was awesome. I was actually watching the first Jurassic Park on HBO the other day. And there's just like a scene at the very beginning where like the lawyer is at that mine in Costa Rica. And in the background of the shot, way in the far background, there's people on horses and there's like ropes and pulleys. Like it's all this atmosphere work for one shot of two actors talking in the foreground
It reminds me of the way they made movies like in like the 30s or so, like old Hollywood, where they would have like thousands of extras and you have like the characters in the foreground, but in the background they have like a whole army marching like off on the hill. I love,
or like neorealism, right?
Yeah,
that craftsmanship. Yeah,
absolutely. So yeah,
what's your star rating, Sam?
My star rating was 5. Yeah, okay. I mean, I could give it a 4.5 for minor things, but it's a 5 for me because it's just like, it's, I applaud it. Like I applaud that film.
Your review did remind me of something I forgot to say, which is the loosely based on a true story thing. And this is one thing I actually really love about the writing in this. So the book is very loosely based on a few oral traditions that we've heard of the real person, the real frontiersman. And then what is depicting isn't even, that's not all in the book either. And I just love that there's this tradition of like building on legendary characters and building on oral history and not being afraid to manipulate that and add to the legendary canon. I think sometimes there's this like weird call for authenticity. Everything has to be nonfiction. Everything has to be true when you're depicting something. But I kind of like that this didn't give into that. They were like, we're going to be true to the spirit of it, but we're going to tell our own story for our own purpose. And I did really appreciate that about the writing.
Very true.
Let's get into a couple of the important details of this film. I mean, obviously I think we should talk about the bear attack, because that's one of the important parts of this film. It's what sold this movie in the trailer. Alejandro Iñárritu has been very tight-lipped about how they accomplished this sequence. Even in interviews, Leo's been like, well, it was part of a pulley system, but they have never explained how they accomplished this. This is about 11 or 12 minute sequence where he is violently mauled by a grizzly bear. No matter what your opinion is on this movie, or anyone's opinion on this movie, it's quite an amazing scene and how they did this. What did you guys think of this? I mean, was it audacious? Was it too much? Did it go on too long? I'd like to hear what you guys think.
One of the better parts of the movie, I thought it was great. And I really, again, coming back to the makeup of it, like Leo's whole body was covered in prosthetics to get this right and for it to look that way. And that was just the technical prowess of it totally had me enamored. So yeah, I think everything in this movie went on too long.
If the beer scene is what attracted people, that's not what attracted me to the movie. Because I know it's not, you know, obviously a real bear and they're just trying to portray it, but that's not. So to me, it's just a CGI, make-believe bear, attacks Leo, whatever. So to me, that scene, it's not what really stuck with me. So that's not the reason I'm attracted to this film, right? Because obviously that was a great scene. It was a great scene to see him fight with a bear or, you know, whatever the bear, the mama bear. It's just, it's funny because the mama bear is protecting her cubs. Well, guess what? Yeah. Leo is protecting his son. And there it goes to see that no matter what kind of animal you are, if you're a parent, if you have a kid, you're going to become ruthless. Because I know if anybody comes to hurt my son, as nice as I am, I'm going to freaking come after you. You don't touch my kid, period.
It's also, I mean, Leo is a trapper, you know, a fur. He's out there hired to collect pelts. So this is nature also fighting back and getting its revenge on him too.
You keep saying revenge.
Yeah, and even though it's like,
I don't see the revenge though. Like,
I see revenge everywhere.
And I know that the actual book says it's the story about revenge. I did not get that from the film though. If the book might be the story.
If not revenge, indifference also, you know, nature's indifference. I mean, because it has no...
I don't think it's nature's indifference, though, because here we are. Nature is nature. We are imposing on nature. We, as humans, are imposing on nature. They have the right to be there. We don't have the right to be there. We don't have the right to come to the mountains and try to take out a bear and their cubs. We don't. So it's not that nature is indifferent. Mm-hmm. It's that we are intruders to nature. To these animals.
That's what I liked about in terms of like the bear scene. I thought the behavior of the bear, like the way it protected its cubs, like what I liked about the way that scene was done, like, yes, I was aware of the CGI work, but like it behaved like a real like mother grizzly bear. And like, I thought that suspense was well built up, because like you see the two cubs come out first, and then your first thought is like, oh shit, he is not he should not be around here. Like, you know, the mother bear is going to appear, but you're not sure from where. So like, I just the staging of that scene felt very realistic and in nature. It didn't feel like action movie scene where like a bear pops out and is like,
it didn't feel like The Gray.
The gray is like straight up action vehicle wolves where they're like, rawr, 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 food, rawr, 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 attack. They're like, they're the As entertaining as The Gray is, the wolves in that movie are like video game wolves. They're like,
yes,
come back, attack, 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 level one, level two, more on the hill, attack, attack. You know, like, yeah.
Here's a question for the crew. Since we all watch movies, like, regardless of when they were made, how do you feel about watching a movie? Like, does dated visual effects take you out of the movie, or can you kind of glaze over it pretty easily?
Totally depends on the storytelling and the, I mean, like, case in point, like Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars, 1980, there are some dated effects and they do not look realistic, but the storytelling and the music, the whole, I think, the
atmosphere.
Even with dated effects, it really comes down to the storytelling. Yeah, so if it's a movie that's like dependent on the special effects, like a bad disaster movie that's dependent on special effects and the special effects are terrible, then the movie sucks.
There's also a period like between, I feel like, 1997 and 2006 where they really did not. It was a rough time for special effects. And it is hard to get past some of it, but, you know, a good story is a good story still. Mm-hmm. So
I want to say that Barrett did a move that my dog does all the time. And I was like, oh my God, that's my Lola Bear. Because I call my dog Lola Bear.
Like, your dog is like a little bear.
Bear. So I was like,
yeah. Lola Bear. Yeah. Outdated effects don't really bother me. I'm on the same boat. As long as it's, you know, fairly decent storytelling, it really, I can just sort of move past it. But I'm asking because this was my first watch of this movie. I had never seen it before. So sometimes, like, when you see that kind of effect when it comes out, you're just like, oh, okay, that's just what this movie looks like. And then years later when you revisit it, I was like, oh, I can see, like, we've gotten better. We've gotten better at this.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if this should be something that Alejandro Iñárritu might revisit to, like, improve the effects down the road, remaster. That would be interesting because it, you know, who knows?
He adds a Balrog from Lord of the Rings. And that opening scene, it's just coming in like, rawr, like stomping on people in the camp. They're like, get the furs, get the goddamn furs.
Alejandro, let Guillermo do it instead.
Yeah, we can remake this now. Yeah, why not? I want to ask you guys, because I want to talk about Tom Hardy's character, John Fitzgerald, because I think he is a fascinating fascinating character in this. I'll start because I think that, you know, he's set up to be obviously the villain in this, but I think he's a very complex character. You know, we're set up to, like, want to hate him. You know, we do hate him, but, you know, at the same time, I kind of understand him.
Do you?
You know, I think he's a victim of his own culture. Mm. And again, you know, he's not a nice guy. And the guy, but he also just wants to get back safe and sound and get paid. And I thought the film did a good job, you know, not making him pure evil, but he's just someone who's scared and he's, and thinking that there's something always just lurking out there that could be out there to kill him, whether it's the elements, some animal, or the Ree. And he makes some horrible choices, but I think that he's set up to be a really flawed character, but not a pure evil character. And I like when movies do that, where he's not just like the mustache twirling villain. And I did appreciate what they did with his character in this movie. Oh, I don't think so at all. He gets worse and worse, but I think he starts off as somebody who's like, hey, he just wants to get
took the cap. He took the captain's hair off.
Well, I'm saying he goes down a dark path, but I like the fact that he.
I like at the beginning when he's introduced, they show how, like, impatient he is compared to other people. He's like, "Oh, we got the fur trap." He's like, "I'm gonna rush here." Like, he's intense and he's distracted and is like, when he's interacting with Leonardo DiCaprio at the very beginning, I like that he's not even making eye contact with him. Like, he you can just feel his energy, it, like, comes through in the beginning of the film.
He's a liar.
Like,
he's a thief. Yeah. He's a killer.
He's somebody. I'm not. I like the fact that he is making the tough choice. to like it's
his staff choice.
It's the whole.
He's like, oh, who do I kill first?
It's Kobayashi's Maru. It's the whole like decision. Like, are we here to save this one person, but risk the whole camp? You know, I mean, like, he's in some ways thinking rationally.
Oh my God! So if you're in a group of people and they were stranded in the snow, and then one of them gets hurt. So if Sam gets hurt and we're all stranded in the snow, Nathan, you're gonna be like, well, we're gonna have to leave Sam behind because he's gonna like kill us all after all.
Well, if Sam was attacked by a bear,
and I resent that it's like, oh, who of this group gets attacked? Sam, let's throw him to the bear. It's like,
Sam's, think about this for jerks. A plausible scenario. Sam gets attacked by a bear, and we are having to carry him across, I don't know, hundreds of miles, and at the risk of us all dying. You know,
I don't understand
the dilemma here.
We don't
leave
nobody behind.
I'm just saying I understand where he is coming from. I'm not saying he's a good guy. I'm saying he's not a good guy, but I understand what is going through his head and why he does the things he does. He goes down a very dark path and he does some awful things, but I think he starts off as somebody who is really just a victim of his environment.
He started off as a bully.
Culture.
No, he's not started off.
Of course, he's a bully. Yes, he's a bully.
Never in the history of my book.
Would you would you justify when he starts like trying, when he's like, I could put you out of your misery for you, or whatever that line is, when he starts to show.
Oh, we got to talk about that. That's huge.
That's rather evil, in my opinion.
Stop right there. Everyone, stop right there. He says, he tells Hugh Glass, I'll put you out of your misery. All you got to do is blink. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So Leo holds out for as long as he can, maybe, but he does blink.
But that doesn't mean
because he has to blink. People,
no,
you can't.
I want to watch this movie again. Leo, his character, deliberately blinks. A deliberate blink. He chooses at that moment. I think, like, you know what? Yes, I am done.
This is the man who believes that you have to fight through everything until your very last breath. He's not about to give up.
No, Leo, Hugh Glass did give up.
I've watched this several times. I would never believe that.
No,
I've seen it several times. I've got to side with Ellie on this one.
Now watch it again. Because Leo is contemplating his options at that moment.
What did you watch?
You see it?
Listeners, leave a comment.
It's not the truth.
I don't think he's contemplating anything. I think he's thinking this guy's going to kill me and I'm stuck here. And
Han Solo shot first.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I
think John Fitch, he's immediately like the most manipulative, slimy person. And they do try to keep engendering him with things that would make him more relatable or make you see his perspective, like, oh, it's been a tough life, or he just got thrown into this, or yada yada. But like, he's just so manipulative. I think I really just feel so bad for that kid he's with, Poulter. Like, I think it really shows how awful he is by having this like wide-eyed innocent hanging around with him.
Yeah.
Okay,
listen, you all have an assignment. Just
I won't
watch
have
that
to.
Scene
oh my
one
God.
More time.
I've seen that scene.
I'm not watching.
I've seen the film like six times.
Now,
it is that inaccurate. He does
I've
not
planted,
know.
I've planted the seed in your head.
No,
now.
You
didn't. Now
there's no seed planted
it.
In my head.
No,
let me tell
it.
You something.
There's no seed.
You have doubts. You all have doubts. You have doubts now.
I'm
going
to say something. First of all, that scene, Leo is trying so hard not to blink. He's in pain. He's in so much pain, and he's trying so hard not to blink that he's telling him, if you blink, I'm going to fucking kill you, right? So
Yeah, and he's Tom Hardy's evil because he knows he has to blink eventually. Exactly. So he's like, give me the signal. Exactly. Like, he's like, I just want to kill you. Like, yeah.
No, but if that were the case, why didn't Leo just blink? Because when people blink, they blink. Why did Leo do like the slow, like deliberate slow blink then?
Because he's trying not to blink. Yeah.
That's not how people blink.
If you're in pain and you try not to die because this dude is going to kill you and you have your son that you want to take care of, you're going to do everything possible not to blink. And then after a while, you're going to have to blink. So as
he can't breathe.
I think he submitted. You know, I think he submitted in that moment. He submitted to the inevitable at that moment.
The beta Leo has submitted.
Okay. I will not be watching that again.
I disagree wholeheartedly.
I'm just not watching this again. So.
You know. Speaking of, you know, we talked a lot about the filmmaking of this, but you know, Leo did. I mean, he put himself through hell. Yeah. In this movie, I mean, we talked about he won the Oscar for this, but he was eating bison liver and raw fish, and he was getting in like I don't know like freezing water. I mean,
and 100 pounds of clothes.
This was no ordinary shoot. You know, this isn't just about like great filmmaking and cinematography. Yeah. This was something that. I think that we have to discuss for a moment because was this even like ethical what was done on this movie? I mean, he obviously submitted to doing
it. It isn't wrong if the actor wants to bring the story to life naturally and realistic to the audience.
I think it's unethical because the movie's not good enough for it. That's the movie were better, it'd be more. No, I mean, I think he gave a great performance. I just didn't always like the way his character was used.
No, it's not unethical.
I was a joke. It was a joke. Of course, it's not unethical.
It would be unethical if the director asked someone to do something and the actor says, no, I'm not doing that, and they still forced them to do it, then that would be unethical.
Absolutely.
And I think the movie is as good as it is because of the manner in which it was made. Like, it's just such an like experience. So like there was a vision for that.
I will fight you for obviously this movie until like, there's no breath left in me.
I'm glad that it has fans. The redeeming qualities are the filmmaking for me. It's not I didn't connect to the story, but the filmmaking. Immersive.
Well, he fought for his Oscar and he got it. I mean, this was I kind of feel like this was like one of what do they call it, like an Oscar where they give it to you just because you didn't win it for Shutter Island or The Wolf of Wall Street, but like you know what, Oscar? you put yourself through hell, so we're gonna
wow, so you don't think he deserved it?
I thought he did. I thought his performance was really like compelling. Like, I don't think they gave it to him out of pity. Like, it's ridiculous.
Nathan, everything you're going to say from here on is not going to be. I'm going to fight you for it. Boy.
I'm just saying. I think he was better in The Wolf of Wall Street. I'm going to tell you right now.
Well, he was great in that film. Yeah.
But he didn't have to go through the physical experience
that he went through in The Revenant.
Does that get him points?
To me,
that get him points?
It wouldn't get him points if his performance were really bad, but his performance was amazing. Yeah. So, like,
okay. Next.
They don't give points for the sake of points. Like, oh, let's give him best supporting actor because he did that wire work really well. You know, like,
bring it on. Like, next, Nathan. Next. Go on.
No, I'm just saying. Let's talk about the end. Ending's interesting. Him and Tom Hardy have their fight around the river, which I thought was a great scene, intense, good fight sequence. We talked about this for a moment, Ellie, where Tom Hardy's character is defeated and. And he doesn't kill him. He does say that this is in, I think, what was the quote, mm-hmm. like it's in God's hands, you know, and floats them down the river. And there are which Native Americans are there? Because I was so confused which group was which.
It's the Ree on. That's over
is,
there, yeah.
Is it the Ree?
Powaka. Isn't she?
Yeah,
with the
she's
Ree?
With the Ree.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. We didn't even talk about that
because that's subplot of this Pawani. Movie too. Pawani.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they finish off Fitzgerald. And I don't know how I felt. I don't know. I'm kind of mixed on that on the ending. He didn't take the revenge. He left it. See, was it really God that took the revenge? He knew what was going to happen if by putting Tom Hardy in the river. It was his fate was sealed at that moment. I mean, it wasn't really God determining what happened to Fitzgerald. That's why I was like, no, it's not God. It's the Ree that's mm-hmm. going to take you out. So
I just thought it was a really fitting demise for his character. Like, yeah. I mean, I liked how he went out. Yeah. I thought it was more than fine. I thought it was really good.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I enjoyed it. I'm not saying anything wrong with it, but I just thought it was like, well, that's not really God taking you out.
I thought it was great, but I thought it was like murder by proxy, but I did think it was an appropriate way for him to die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there, the final shot is him looking right at the camera at us. What do you think that's inferring? Because I was wondering if that has any kind of symbolism or so. He's looking right into our souls. Like,
I often wonder if I'd wondered at one point if he'd succumbed to his wounds. But then I wasn't sure, and I thought that maybe he's just like enlightened, you know.
I'm wondering,
like, there's a kind of spiritual element to it. It's like a little vague, but yeah.
Does Hugh Glass survive?
He's dead.
I kind of get the feeling
he was dead. He was.
Yeah, I don't think he
scalped him. I don't think he can survive a scalping. Can you?
No. He's talking about DiCaprio's character. Oh. If he thinks he lived at the very very end. I think he survived, but I'm not. It was ambiguous where like he could have been like fading, but maybe it was more like a spiritual ending where like he'd met the end of his quest, and it's like the first time he's like taking a breather. So when he's looking at the audience, he's just like
I got from that scene thoughts. to me when he ends, it's that he's accomplished his goal. He found
right,
his
exactly
justice.
Yeah.
And you know when you finally have gone through all the shit you can go through in life, and for DiCaprio, this is like he's gone through every possible. I mean, this dude went through every possible thing, okay, to find justice for the killer of his son. And he finally does. He doesn't kill him. He could have easily done that, but he doesn't kill the man. He lets some judge, whether it's God or the indigenous tribe coming around, take care of that judgment. So he might have said it's in God's hand, or it's whatever your God is. But the thing is, he's come to the he's accomplished what he set out to do, which is to find judgment or. Not judgment, but what's the word? Justice, to find justice for the killing of his son.
Revenge. And it's like a positive ending for his quest because he didn't actually commit the murder. He doesn't have blood on like his consciousness
and
is
now
like
he
enlightened.
He can succumb to his ailments because, like, you know, Arthur Redclaw says in that scene, your body is. What's the word he uses? Your body is rotten. He tells him, your body rotten. Yeah. And he starts to heal him with plants from around there. But his body is so rotten by that point. He was just keeping himself alive until he could find justice. And he did. And I feel to me that ending is him saying, it's okay. You know, it's okay now.
Okay.
And I think he probably did succumb to his
wounds. it seems like, but I like how it's like ambiguous, where it's like it does seem like he's succumbing to his wounds, but you leave him off on a hopeful note, where it's like it'd be much worse if you see him like if he slumped over and like you just saw him died and the camera pulled back, it would like send the wrong message, you know, tonally, yeah.
I think too, he went out on his terms.
Yeah. You know? Right. Yeah.
And I think like that final look in the camera to me was like a chin up, you know, like a little almost cocky. You know what I mean? Like, this is my story. You know what I mean? Like, I'm writing this, you know?
Mm. Exactly. He's like, he's been through the gauntlet. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to take a break for a moment before we get to our closing thoughts and our MVPs and our decision on whether this is going to be included in our vault or not. I want to invite feedback to our show because, you know, I think we've had some good and some different opinions on this, and we want to hear what you think. You can email us at backtotheframerate@gmail.com. We have a Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and TikTok page. That handle is Back to the Frame Rate. Also on Twitter, Back Frame Rate. And of course, we have our newsletter, which you should definitely sign up for, Frame Rate Monthly. Just send us an email at backtoframerate@gmail.com. Also, I want to share some other exciting news. The Westing Media Podcast Network has a new podcast that I'm really excited. It's called You've Never Seen with Joey Haskins. And all of a sudden, we have 35 episodes of it already available everywhere on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much everywhere where you can listen to podcasts. And that's called You've Never Seen. And there's a link to it that I'm going to put in the show notes here. But they're really short episodes. They're usually between 4 to 6 minutes long. It's also in the world of movies where Joey Haskins discusses and reviews a film that you've probably never seen before, at least he believes so. And it's a really fun podcast that I think you should check out. It's good stuff. So I highly recommend that and subscribing to it. And of course, our website is backtotheframerate.com, where you can find all of our episodes, old and new. And yeah, so we are going to get to our closing thoughts on The Revenant. We're going to start with our MVPs for the film. And we're going to start with Ellie.
Obviously.
One thing. What's it going to be?
My MVP that makes this movie for me is Leo. And the reason, aside all the beautiful cinematography and the scenes and the technical parts, for me, this movie is more than just, you know, like the book calls it, the revenge of somebody or a revengeful story. And the way I went into watching this film wasn't about the revenge, but the way I went into watching this film from the very first time I saw it, when I saw it in the cinema, was, or at least what I was left with, was the struggle or the love of a father to a son, what he would do to make sure that kid, that son is okay, is safe and protected, and the quest to find justice for the killing of his son. And there are elements in this movie that Iñárritu touches upon, which is the Native American indigenous side of this movie. There's so many lines in this movie from the tribe that's looking for her daughter that is being horribly raped by white men. Okay. There are so many elements to this story. It's not just a movie about, you know, galloping horses and killing people and whatnot, but there's more to this. And this is where the heart of the movie comes for me, where, you know, let's talk about the other side of this movie that Iñárritu portrayed very well, which is so real. And this is the truth of the story to me. These pioneers, Europeans, come to this country and they take the land forcefully, killing families and killing children and raping women and kidnapping them for their own pleasure. And he does well doing that. It's horrible to see, but that's the reality of what happened. So for me, this film is more than just, you know, a few men trying to, I don't know, conquest the frontier in the United States, in America. It's really, the heart for me was the portrayal of the Native American people in the film, which is not a lot, but it's there. And if he hadn't portrayed that really well, I probably would not connect it to this film as much as I did. So, yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. I guess I'm up next. My MVP, you know, this is hard because I think it has to go to something like technical in this, because I think that this movie is just gorgeous and beautiful. And I mean, this is the kind of thing I would want to have just on in the background, you know, just on the biggest screen possible, just to like gawk at. So therefore, the only thing that makes sense to me would be to say it's the cinematographer Emmanuel Lubezki, because I think his vision and what he brought to this was something I've never seen before. I mean, I got to give credit to Iñárritu as well, because I'm sure that their collaboration was a major part of that. But just his camera work alone and how he lens things was incredible. And so I'm going to give it to Emmanuel Lubezki. And winning the Academy Award 3 in a row, he is unbelievable what he did for this film.
For sure.
So, all right, I'm going to go to B.
When the colonist gets mutilated for raping a woman. That was probably my favorite scene. That was a good moment of direct revenge. That was up there, but also the snowflake catching scene.
That's great. Yeah. I should mention that. Snowflake catching scene. Great. Mm-hmm. Glad you had a specific scene. That's awesome.
Yeah. I like that we got to see the Native Americans. I like that.
Yeah.
Defending themselves.
You know, if I had to pick a scene also, I'd probably say the opening scene as well, because it felt like a cut scene from, I might change it too. If I had to pick an exact scene, it would be that opening scene, because it felt, like I said, it felt like a video game, like something I'd be playing like in Fallout or in.
Wait, are we doing MVP scenes? We're doing scenes, MVPs, or people, or everything?
Just whatever's your favorite thing in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm changing mine to the opening uncut scene of when they're attacked, and somebody gets an arrow through the neck, and there's a, just how that camera floats through that whole attack is just an amazing way to enter into this film. It just grabs you, and you know you're in for a ride. So that's my MVP. I am changing it. There you go, Sam.
I just want to say, no, and you've already touched upon it, but the cinematography is amazing, and I can't believe I forgot to include the cinematographer and the notes, and thanks for picking that up way back at the beginning of the review. But for me, I want to say the atmosphere of the movie is incredible. The acting is incredible, the whole experience, but I got to point out Alva Noto's soundtrack to me in this film is incredible. That like undercurrent of like forlorn, kind of heavy, like the journey has so much longer to go vibe to it. I just think it makes the film, there's a feeling to this movie. This is the kind of film that I like want to watch in like a cabin in the middle of the winter with like a fire, and it's just me and the Revenant and like scotch, and I'm just like you know, like it's one of those films that just has such a strong vibe.
Sam, so I want you to
music,
list your
the music
your
t- really does
at
that.
At some point, I want you to list your top 10 Scotch movies.
Oh man, I don't know. That's I'd be hard to. I really have not given it that much thought. I don't know if there's 10 whole Five. Movies. Yeah,
I feel like it's a theme that's come up a couple times. That's why.
I'll tell you, Dante's Peak is one of them with Pierce Brosnan. That's a great Scotch movie. Yeah.
Good. All right. All right, so that's our MVPs. Now, one of the most important things to get to on our show is, does this movie get entered into our vault or get exiled into the fiery asteroid apocalypse. Ellie, you are first, and I don't know if there's much suspense in this, but what say you?
What say I? Yeah.
For all the reasons that you've mentioned over the last hour, I'll just think we can safely
say. Well, yeah. I mean, come on.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. We get it. Okay. I am going to say, just because this is the best at so many things, as far as cinematography and spectacle and scope, and it does so many things incredibly well, it gets major points for that. Do I want to see this movie again anytime soon? I'm in no rush to see that. I feel like I have experienced
this movie. Yeah, but if we're
movie.
Talking about the vault and in an apocalyptic moment, why wouldn't you save it?
I want to see something more entertaining. That's why. Because I said before, I think this movie is more interesting than entertaining. But should this movie, I'm also thinking about the future. And if I want to say, hey, this is how you make a movie that will blow you away with visuals and single take action sequences, this movie does it better than any other movie I've ever seen. Learn from this. This movie has something to teach us about the art of filmmaking. This is why this movie has value to me. And it's not about the story.
That's the thing.
And that's the thing. So, and is that enough to put it in the vault? And I'll say yes. So we're on to B.
Someone has to be the voice of reason here.
Yeah.
It's a no for me. We're going to have so many amazing movies that are so technically well-crafted. Yeah. We're only like four in, Ellie. We got time.
We have time. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I don't think I've never seen a movie this technically, purely technically, this well crafted. It is short on many, many other things. But I agree with you, B. It's got its story shortcomings and emotionally shortcomings for me as well. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's pretty much it. I mean, you know, I love that it has its ardent fans. It's like, I feel like the outlier here. I get it. You know, I feel that way about a lot of films that other people aren't as passionate about. So I can empathize with that, but this one just didn't do it for me. So I'm okay leaving it out.
I would put it in the vault. That's just me.
I lose.
We're all winners.
Just don't eat a winner, okay? Because it comes from horses.
Oh my gosh. That scene where he gets in the horse, man, that was a tough watch for me.
All right.
I do think they should have a Revenant Lord of the Rings crossover. That just makes no sense, you know, where like he crawls out of the horse and Gandalf sees, he's like, what on earth are you doing?
So guys.
Hickyick makes him that medical shed and he's like, we need some Kingswella.
Can you imagine like Gimli like attacking? He just comes in. He's like, with my blade.
So very important. We have this. Maybe locked away to the point where we can't see it again, because hopefully we don't lose the key. We each have a copy. There we have it. Revenant saved.
Woo-hoo!
Forever and ever.
Maybe I'll come around to it in the after times.
if you wanna be part of the popcorn crew, you're gonna have to like it. No, just kidding. Otherwise you don't get a popcorn.
If I had decided not to put it in the vault and it was like two no's and two yeses, what would happen?
Would we have
to go to another round?
No, it has to be majority.
But there was no majority.
Yes, there was.
No, but what would happen if like two were saying
Yeah, what if happened it was 2-2? Yeah.
It's not a majority.
Right, so what do you do?
Yeah.
It's not a majority. It doesn't go in the vault. Doesn't go in the vault.
No, you have to break the tie.
What? We can talk about changing the rules to this if you want, but I'm just saying we agreed that it would be has to be 3 out of 4.
The funny thing with playing the tie is then you have to force someone to change their opinion. Be like, want to be a fucking,
it's like 12 Angry Men.
Fucking change it. Change it.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, if you don't change it, I'm going to come to your house and beat you.
All right. Well, that is the show this week. Back to the Frame Rate is part of the Westin Media Podcast Network. We also wish to thank Brian Ellsworth for our show opening. I keep forgetting to thank him for that. On behalf of all of us, we bid you farewell from our fallout shelter. Your presence in our underground sanctuary is truly appreciated. We are truly sorry you cannot join us, but we want to express our gratitude for your company. If you are finding solace in our discussions, we kindly ask that you please subscribe and leave a rating and review. Your support is the beacon of light that brightens our confined space. Head on over to Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, or whichever portal connects you to our broadcast and share your thoughts. Until we emerge from the fallout, stay with us, keep hope alive, and keep those reviews coming. This is the end of our transmission. Back to the Frame Rate, signing off.
I want you to know it's over.
Well.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.